You're listening to the Sports Therapy Association podcast, putting evidence back into soft tissue therapy. And we're live. Hey, people. Welcome to the Sports Therapy Association podcast, episode 193, entitled Concussion: Causes, Risk, and Treatment, with special guest Nicola Hunt, Director of Physio Care Rehab. My name is Matt Phillips, in case you're not familiar with this voice after 193 weeks. I'm creator of runchatlive.com, and as always, this episode is being recorded live on a Tuesday at 8 o'clock on the Sports Therapy Association YouTube channel and Facebook page and Facebook group. So if you are listening to the podcast, then thank you very much. We would appreciate it massively if you could leave a rating and a review. It just helps the good word of our guests get out to more people. But if you do like the idea of coming along and putting questions to the guests directly and just hanging out in the live lounge with other like-minded soft tissue therapists, then all you got to do is come along to YouTube or the Facebook on a Tuesday at 8 o'clock. Simple as that. Anyway, so concussions is what we're going to be talking about this episode. Very excited about this. Obviously, it's something that a lot of listeners are familiar with, and we have asked, we've had people asking to have more information on it, especially if you're working pitch side, rugby and football and everything. There were some interesting questions as well in the advert, which a few people picked up on, and it caused some discussion across social media, such as you can actually ask these if you're listening to yourself and see how quickly the answer comes through. Are concussions always the result of an intense blow to the head? Have a little think about that. Might come quickly. It might not. Is loss of consciousness linked with severity of injury? Have a little ponder. And should someone with concussion be allowed to sleep? And obviously, there's lots more. And the fact is, these questions are just using to highlight that concussion is a topic often played with misinformation and myth, which can sadly lead to improper protocol and treatment. But fear not. For my guest, Nicola Hunt, Director of Physio Care Rehab, has significant expertise in delivering evidence-based concussion management, or has been involved in treating that for 25 years using brain injury rehabilitation, vestibular rehabilitation for both central and peripheral disorders. So it's going to be a hugely valuable episode for all therapists and rehab specialists. So I'm just going to check that there are people here in the live lounge. Remember, if you are joining us live, you are welcome to ask us questions directly. Nikki Mansfield is through the door saying, evening, everybody. This is bound to be good. Can't go wrong with a Nicola. Oh, there you go. I see what you did there, Nikki. Very, very good. I was like, what is she on about? She's been hitting the show early. But no, thanks, Nikki, for joining us. If you do join us live, then what happens basically is I can bring your question or comment up onto the screen along with your logo. So it's a great networking opportunity. If, for example, I bring your comment up and it says Facebook user, that basically just means that you need to click on a link which gives Facebook permission for me to put your information on the screen. So what I'll do, it should be in the comments for where you joined, but I'll put this onto the screen as well so you can see it. Basically, Facebook user who says evening, folks, if that's you, you need to go to b.live/comments-issue. So that's b.live/comments-issue. And just say, yes, I'm happy for Matt to use Facebook to show my comments. That's what it is. So we know who you are. If not, just say in the comments, hey, it's me. That's it. Also, Glenn Murphy is here. Hi, Glenn. How are you doing? And other people coming through the door. So always good to see people join us live. That's much appreciated. I always say I probably wouldn't do this if it wasn't live. We love the spontaneity. We love making our guests squirm a little bit. But though I'm sure there'll be no squirming tonight because we've got such a specialist in the field. We'll make sure there's a little bit of squirming. Anyway, this is it, people. So without further ado, allow me to bring up my special guest for tonight, Nicola Hunt.
You're listening to the Sports Therapy Association podcast, putting evidence back into soft tissue therapy.
Hi, Nicola. How are you doing?
Hi, Matt. I'm really well, thank you. And thank you for inviting me along this evening.
An absolute pleasure. I appreciate you giving up your time, especially as you're such a specialist in this field. You're Director of Physio Care Rehab, which is based where? I'd like to let people know where you are in the country to start off.
I'm in Newark, Nottinghamshire.
Newark. Why does that ring a bell, Nikki? Is that near you? I'm sure we've had somebody else in Newark. Sometimes we have guests listening thinking, wow, this person's just round the corner from me. And it just makes us realise that we're in a world now where talking to each other since COVID is much more popular now, isn't it? We share time and everything. So if you are Newark based, then Nicola Hunt is talking from around there today. So Let's get straight into it, if you don't mind, Nicola.
Really?
So, as I mentioned in the introduction, you specialise in evidence-based concussion management, which kind of implies, with using the words evidence-based, that there is some forms of concussion management out there that are not evidence-based. So maybe that would be a nice introduction for you to chat about that. And also, in doing so, give us a definition of what concussion is.
Okay, so let's start with what a concussion is. So a concussion is a mild traumatic brain injury. And the terms are interchangeable, but I know sort of there are a lot of people favouring the term mild traumatic brain injury because it's harder to trivialise it, whereas it's easier to trivialise and go, oh, it's just a concussion. You don't hear many people saying, oh, it's just a brain injury.
That's such a good
so point. There is a little bit of pushback. I won't name and shame, but there was a sports coach on Sunday went live in his post-game interview to say that the reason that they, one of the contributing reasons to why they lost was that their goalkeeper was playing with a concussion that he received 24 hours before. So again, you know, change that word for brain injury and you're far less likely to stand there and want to say it.
That's such a valid point. That's amazing.
Yeah. So if we think what a concussion is, it is a concussion or mild traumatic brain injury, and it's caused by a biomechanical force which is transmitted to the brain, causing stretch and shear damage to the brain cells. And that damage results in inflammation, energy depletion, and disruption to the brain networks.
I'll just let you keep talking. I'm not going to jump in there with the question. You've got far more interesting things to say than me, so you keep going.
So I'm probably going to bust one of the myths right away. Is, you know, I think a lot of people think that a concussion has to be a hit to the head. It doesn't, because the definition of a concussion is a biomechanical force transmitted to the brain. So that can be by a direct impact to the head, but it can be by an impact to the body or a whiplash type injury, which then transmits the forces to the head, resulting in the concussion.
That's so important. I will jump in here because anything that I think is really relevant to our listeners. I mean, a lot as we talked off air, a lot of our listeners are sports therapists, sports rehab specialists. So they may fall prey to this myth. I know I used to before I met people like yourself and Keith Burnett and talk with them. You always think you think you're being fantastic with a great subjective and talking about case history, listen to the patient. And as soon as they say, as you realize there's been no impact on the head, you think, well, I could rule out concussion. And it's obviously not that. But in fact, if you delve deeper and has there been any impact to the body that could have caused a jarring or something or a whiplash kind of effect, then you could still be dealing with a concussion then, you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of concussions, particularly in sports such as rugby, it's the speed and impact of the tackle that transmits the force to the brain rather than the actual impact to the head.
Amazing. That's such an important. This, I can tell this episode is going to be full. Get your Becky, Carol's just come in the room. Becky, get your pen and paper out for this one. And there's going to be a lot to jot down. Okay. Yes. So biomechanical force, it can be a direct impact to the head or it could be transmitted through some other impact to the body somewhere. Yeah, keep going with some myths, if you would. Let's say what it's not, and then let's move into what it is and what we should be doing.
Okay, so a common myth is that you have to lose consciousness to have had a concussion, when the reality is that only around 10% of people who have a positive concussion lose consciousness at that point of the concussion.
I read that, and it just looked so strange on paper again. I'm thinking quite a lot of these myths maybe are perpetuated by films and kind of the media and culture and stuff, because we always imagine you go down, you're unconscious, and therefore you've had a concussion. But you could have suffered a concussion. In fact, you said 10%. It's only 10% actually involve losing consciousness. Wow.
Yeah. And only 10% of concussions will lose consciousness. The other 90% will have sustained a concussion, but without losing consciousness.
That's something to take in. So again, when you're doing your case history, people, or even if you're pitch side and you're going, oh, well, he didn't lose consciousness, just keep playing, mate. You're fine. You weren't out at all. And I can hear sports therapists and anybody pitch side, whether physios, whatever, kind of using that as a judgment call. And that's a big one, isn't it? There must be so many people who don't realize that.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think also, you know, it's not just the therapist, it's the players themselves. Well, I didn't lose consciousness. I'm fine. So, you know, there's a lot to do around player education as well as therapist education.
That's a big one. You keep going. I'm just excited about what's coming out next.
So another myth is that, you know, and, you know, this again comes a lot from the hospitals and the medical team who maybe don't have the best understanding of concussion, that, you know, CT scan's normal, MRI is normal, therefore you don't have a concussion, there's nothing wrong with you, go away. So, you know, as I described, the injury to the brain cell is a stretching and shearing. It changes the sort of the chemical reactions within the brain. It changes the energy levels in the brain. But what it doesn't necessarily do is destroy any brain tissue. So an MRI or a CT scan will show structural damage or a bleed. So it's not going to show a concussion, because a concussion is a functional injury of the brain. So it's like the software isn't working rather than the hardware's damaged.
And in your experience, because MRIs are, we've talked about this with regards to lots of injuries that, oh, there was nothing on the MRI. And we know that MRIs, to start off with, it can be very difficult to read, and specialists can see different things at different times and different moments. But I'm wondering how much in mainstream healthcare, there are people still making their decision on whether this person is okay because their MRI looked okay. Is this something you think is still happening?
I think because the NHS, as a general rule, doesn't have a concussion service, they are really concerned about, is there anything on that scan that we need to treat? Is there a bleed? Is there a clot? Is the trauma and bruising to the brain tissue itself? They're less concerned about functional injury because they don't have a pathway to transfer that into. And actually, you know, from a neurosurgery point of view, the real immediate danger is, you know, is there something that we need to operate on or keep under very close observation in case we need to operate very soon? So, you know, for the ones that show the red flags, yes, they need to go to hospital and potentially be scanned. But for lots of people who have a concussion, a scan isn't indicated.
I think it would be interesting. I know we had a little bit of a chat off air about what happens at a cellular level with concussion. And I think it touches nicely on what we're talking about at the moment, that you might not see physical damage on the actual MRI. So without getting too deep, which I know is an insult to your 25 years of study, but what sort of thing are we talking about has happened in a concussion that wouldn't show up on the MRI?
So the damage in a concussion is a shearing and stretch. So if you think about your nerves, your neurons in the brain, as they get stretched within that, simplifying it slightly, within that neuron, there's some little pores, and it's through those pores or gates that ions change from inside the nerve to outside the nerve and back again. And that's essentially how a nerve impulse occurs. It's that changing of ion from inside to outside that transmits the message along the nerve, because it's just an electrical impulse. So by stretching the nerves and opening those channels, then the ions freely move in and out. Now, when we use our neurons, you know, we use bits of the brain at a time, generally speaking. With an impact, that biomechanical force, you can get that change in the nerve, in all the nerves, you know, right across all areas of the brain, which is essentially what we would describe as a nerve firing. So that sort of gives rise to some of the symptoms that somebody may get. So they may say, oh, I saw stars or flashing lights. That's the nerves firing in the visual area of the brain. Or they may have, you know, heard noises. That could be in the auditory, the hearing part of the brain. So that's explained some of the symptoms that you get. And what happens is that those change of nerves, those change of ions, where they, you know, they swap over, they have to be pumped back. And that's an active process that requires energy, energy in the form of ATP is the energy that we use in the body, in cells. So to be able to sort of revert everything back to where it should be requires a huge amount of chemical energy within the brain. So that massively decreases the amount of energy available to the brain. And that continues. We're not sort of entirely sure, you know, the sort of the average is somewhere between 7 to 21 days that gets back to normal with people. And certainly sort of, you know, with areas where you don't have the ability to assess clinically to that level to see sort of what, you know, what sort of stage of recovery the brain is at, then the UK grassroots concussion guidelines say no competitive play within 21 days. And that's to ensure that the energy levels in the brain has fully physiologically healed. So it's not anatomy, it's not structure, it's the physiology, the how it works that's changed.
So interesting then. So in a nutshell, and I can't believe we're only 18 minutes into the show, but in a nutshell, you've shown that because it is the physiology and not the structure, the more we understand that, then that clarifies and helps us get rid of misinformation, which we've used to diagnose it, to rehab it, to look for risk factors from it. All of that, this has to be slightly moved to the left because we now know what's actually causing it inside. That's fascinating.
Yeah. If there are red flags, it's important that somebody gets immediate medical care and potentially a scan. And I just noticed a question from Becky to say,
let's bring it up
there.
Becky Carroll, I knew you'd been there very quickly. Becky Carroll says, are there gender differences with concussion?
Yes. So women are much more likely to sustain a concussion, and they are more likely to sustain the concussion probably with less force. And some of the reason for that is I talked about how it being a biomechanical force transmitted. If we think about, and if we just take as a sporting example, male rugby and female rugby, then we know that neck stability is greater in men than it is in women. So neck strength and endurance strength is higher in men than it is in women. Therefore, men have, as a generalization, a more sort of stable neck, and therefore they are more able to stabilize at the neck and not transmit the biomechanical forces to the head than the female gender, who are more susceptible to a concussion because their neck isn't able to sort of absorb that biomechanical hit, and therefore the forces transmit up easier.
Fantastic. So that's once again an interesting point to bear in mind. If the athlete presented themselves in front of his female as opposed to male, it won't take us quite as much in the case history to potentially cause a concussion as it would do a male.
Yes, absolutely. And for anybody involved in sort of doing the training and the warm-up, actually doing neck stabilization regimes as part of training and pre-game can help. Because again, we know that if the hit comes from the front where you're prepared for it, you are less likely to sustain a concussion than if it's an absolute blinded hit from the back where you weren't braced and ready for it.
Brilliant. And that kind of reminds me, I think we mentioned it a little bit last week, but there's this, I love this word chaos at the moment, which is we talked about at Therapy Expo, where if you're preparing for rehab, or if you're doing rehab, or just preparing to reduce the risk of injury, you need to recreate that chaos, which is on the pitch. So it's no point just doing strength work or reactive work when you can see it happening in front of you. You need to do reactive work where it's happening suddenly and you have to react quickly to prepare for those forces. Brilliant. I love it when it all comes together.
Absolutely. So there is another question there from Nikki Mansfield.
Nikki Mansfield, let's read it out for podcast listeners. That's a great question, Becky. Thank you. Nikki Mansfield says, is that nerve misfiring what causes the reflexive shoulder flexion we sometimes see on a rugby pitch where a player hits the deck unconscious and their arm shoots out above their head?
Yes. Spot on. That's exactly what's happened. So that's nerve firing in the motor cortex. And sort of very often it's almost sort of reflex activity that is released. So that sometimes it can be flexion activity, sometimes it's extension activity, but you will see those sort of gross movement patterning when you get that sudden firing of all the neurons, all the nerves in the motor cortex.
Fantastic. Great question, Nikki. Great question. Right. So there is another myth that I was thinking of. I don't even know how much it's a myth, but I think quite a few people are probably aware or have heard of that if somebody has potentially suffered from concussion, they mustn't go to sleep. And you've got to try and keep them awake or something, or keep them active, because that could make things worse. Is that bordering on the myth thing, or how does that all come to play with what we know?
It's a little bit of both. Mm. So, you know, the reason for that is that if somebody has got more than a concussion, so if they have got a bleed, then they, you know, and they go to sleep, you wouldn't recognize the deterioration. Mm-hmm. So the sort of the standardized advice is that you don't sleep for at least 3 hours. So they're monitored, and nobody with a concussion should be left at home alone. They shouldn't be left alone. They shouldn't be driving, and no alcohol or drugs, because you don't want anything that is going to mask any deterioration. So again, you know, should stay awake for at least 3 hours, and then just sort of, you know, check through the night that they are wakeable. So that, you know, yes, they need to rest, because rest and sleep is a big part of recovery from a concussion, but it also needs to be monitored that actually they're rousable. So they are asleep. They've not drifted into unconsciousness.
And that's interesting as well. I think we'll dip in and out of athletic population and non-athletic, but if someone has, I'm thinking now, I can imagine the conversation. I'm sure I've said it before to my wife, so I'm going to get into trouble here, but imagine a child has had a hit to their head. Okay, they've fallen over, they've smacked it against something. Traditionally, you would say, look, they didn't lose consciousness, they're fine, they don't need to go to the hospital, they'd be great. But from what you're saying is that potentially there could be a concussion there, so you do need to monitor them, go in every few hours, see how they are, and maybe even they should be spending a night in hospital.
Yes, particularly with children, yes, because again, you know, children are more susceptible. And I think that brings us probably nicely onto something I've touched on a few times, but not actually gone into detail of, is the red flags. So, you know, as outlined in the Concussion Recognition Tool 6, some of the red flags that do need immediate medical assessment and attention is if there is, at the time of injury, sudden onset of neck pain or tenderness. If they have a seizure or fit, if there is loss of consciousness and double vision. Again, you know, whilst you can get loss of consciousness with a concussion, it would certainly be a reason to go and have a medical assessment. And then the others are sort of some things that maybe sort of, you know, may come on initially, but may come on over sort of a period of hours. So things like increasing confusion. So, if, you know, if they're initially a little bit disorientated, but they become increasingly confused, or, you know, you're seeing behavioral changes like agitation, restlessness, irritability, you know, even being a little bit sort of aggressive, like you would sort of picture your slightly aggressive drunk sort of behavior. And that's another good reason why people shouldn't have alcohol, because again, alcohol and sort of that deteriorating brain function can be similar in its presentation, and it certainly masks the ability to assess well what's going on. So then, the, you know, the other things is if you've got weakness or numbness and or tingling in more than one limb, so more than one arm and or leg, you know, so you've got one-sided symptoms or both legs, both arms, then again, that is trip to casualty. And again, sometimes somebody will vomit and vomit once, and that, you know, that's still within sort of what we would class as a concussion. But if there's repeated vomiting, again, that can be a sign of raising pressure in the head due to a bleed. Therefore, that's again is a trip to A&E. And the obvious one, which I think everybody would send, is if there's any visual deformity of the skull, then they're going to A&E. And I think that's something we see a lot more in children, because they're very much more commonly to sort of get that sort of big bruising with a bump.
So this is so it really kind of stresses the responsibility of, let's say, the pitch side sports therapist or physio, that their job really hasn't finished when the player is driven home by their parent or brother, whoever it is. You should really be giving them solid advice on what to look out for over the next few hours. And if you're that close to them, looking after them, even kind of checking in and seeing if any of the symptoms have come up.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You know, that head, you know, head injury advice around what to look for, and, you know, what are the red flags, monitor for red flags. And if any of these occur, 999 and go to A&E is certainly the advice.
Fantastic. And you mentioned rather quickly there, this was the Concussion Recognition Tool 6. Why is it called that? Why Tool 6? I'm sorry if I'm showing my ignorance here, but why, where's Tool 5, 4, 3, 2, 1?
They've been over the years. So normally it's every 3 years. Obviously COVID came along and pushed it along. Then there is a worldwide concussion conference where all the leading experts in concussion come together and look at what the current evidence is, rewrite the guidelines, rewrite or tweak any assessment tools. So yourself and some, you know, people listening may well be familiar with the SCAT.
Mm-hmm.
So we're now on SCAT 6 as of last year. So previously to that, it was the SCAT 5. And again, it's just as more evidence emerges, they decide what is most appropriate to go in the assessment tools.
Fantastic. Great advice. Keep the questions coming, people. If you so wish, Becky and Nikki, there are great questions so far. I'm sure you've got many more there. Please don't hold back at all, because that's one of the ideas of joining us live. Any questions you may have. And even if you share some experiences, if anybody listening in the live lounge has does work pitch side or has worked pitch side, or I say pitch like pitch, every single sport has a pitch, but any scenario where potentially concussion has happened or could happen, then do let us know about your own experiences as well. Let's take it back to actually being on pitch side. Rather than the kind of 3 hours afterwards, I'll create a scenario for you then off the top of my head. Let's imagine standing on the line, you'd be focusing on something else. Maybe another player was kind of getting on with something. You're just watching them. Then suddenly there's a massive hoo-ha and you know that somebody's gone down. They're not unconscious and you've checked them unconscious. What sort of check should you be doing both with them and people around them to work out what happened in order to rule out, hopefully, concussion? Because that's going to have a massive effect on whether that player is allowed to continue playing or come back on later, isn't it?
Yeah.
What should we be looking out for?
So, you know, one of the biggest clues is mechanism of injury. So, you know, was there a direct hit or was it witnessed that they had significant impact from a tackle or a collision that, you know, would start to give you clues that there could be enough force there? And then you're looking at sort of the five S's are sort of some of the things that we're looking for. So, you know, initially, was there initial slump in their posture? Did they fall to the floor? Were they motionless for a moment or two? Was there any loss of consciousness? Big, again, another one we're looking for is sway. Is their balance affected? Are they slow? So are their movements delayed? Are they slower walking around or are they swaying, staggering? So looking at the sort of what we say is, you know, the star, are they confused? Is there any unusual behavior? And what's their speech like? Are they slurring? Is their speech slower? Are they struggling to recall words you would expect them to know? So they would be sort of, you know, your initial clues. And then you should be using sort of a recognized concussion screening tool. So the SCAT, standardized concussion assessment tool. Looking at, and that will assess some of the things that we know are instantly affected in concussion. Again, it can sort of develop over several hours. So it, you know, it's not a case of I assess them now and they, you know, that's it. They're fine. I think the other thing to say is certainly the concussion in grassroots guidelines is that, you know, if it's a suspected concussion and you are not medically qualified to be able to make that assessment to whether it was or it wasn't, but you suspect it, they are off. Now, elite sport will have people pitch side who are capable of, you know, running the SCAT and deciding whether or not, you know, it was a concussion. But if in grassroots sports where there isn't anybody who is able to run that, then the guidelines are you are off and that they should dial 111 within sort of 24 hours and seek medical advice as to whether it was or it wasn't a concussion. But certainly sort of for grassroots sports, it's a concussion until it's proven is otherwise if you have a method of injury that suspects it.
Very interesting. And this may well happen, might it? A lot of occasions, the person who's working pitch side might not be familiar with those protocols. They might have been pulled in the last minute, or there might just be somebody who's just, in which case, yeah, they have to have the confidence to say, I haven't got the right tools to do this. That player's got to come off. I know that how much. Because managers and other team players and, you know, the spectators might want something totally different to happen, but that's where responsibility comes into it, doesn't it?
Yeah. There's a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure.
You definitely don't get paid enough either for that pressure.
No.
You're probably just a student who's not getting paid anything, but given the chance to work with a team. Yeah, we know how that works, unfortunately, all too often. Hey there, Matt Phillips here. Sorry to interrupt the podcast. Just 60 seconds to remind you that if you're looking for beard grooming products, there is a Sports Therapy Association discount code that will get you 15% off at The Brighton Beard Company, website thebrightonbeardcompany.co.uk. Yes, I am biased, what with Brighton being my hometown, but the Brighton Beard Company really do offer an absolutely amazing selection of luxurious beard balms and impeccably scented oils, all handmade in small batches with 100% natural ingredients. Their current spring collection, for example, contains bergamot, coriander, thyme and lavender, giving you a fresh and energising essence with both citrusy and peppery notes, making it the perfect gift for you, a family member or any friend with facial hair. Go to thebrightonbeardcompany.co.uk and get 15% off now by entering the discount code STA15. Doesn't include already discounted bundles. Becky's got another great question here, if that's okay with you. Becky says, for those involved in sports activities that are at an increased risk of concussion, are there any recommendations to minimize these risks? For example, neck strengthening exercises. We kind of touched on that with regards to recreating that chaos.
Yes.
Reactive stuff. Anything else spring to mind?
Yes. You know, it would be neck stability as much as neck strengthening. So, you know, while we want strong neck muscles, we want that neck stability on impact. So we want to minimize the head movement with impact. So it is exercises that are building up neck stability. I know a while ago, rugby did introduce sort of a nice sort of warm up program for neck stability, looking at sort of, you know, depending on how strong their neck is, you know, it can be just sort of, you know, getting here and pushing your head backwards against your hands, pushing your head forward against your hands, going sideways. So you're actually doing isometric work, working those deeper muscles within the neck. And, you know, for some of the, you know, you sort of more sort of higher level rugby players, that could be, you know, can they rest their head on a bench and sort of do a sort of a bridge with their feet so that only their feet and their head has got any contact? How long can they do that? And again, remembering that the ratio of extension to flexion. Now then, what is the ratio? But you would expect to be able to sustain an extension for longer than you would into flexion.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the same for strength. So working, you know, working within those ratios when you're doing sustained isometrics, you want to be working the extensors longer than you are the plexus.
Great. And I imagine if we're talking about stability and reaction time, then we're not necessarily talking about the person with a massive neck and the hypertrophy is going to be the best equipped at this. It's not necessarily a size thing.
No, yep. Because you're looking at your deeper sort of stability muscles. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, you know, as you've alluded to, is around sort of vision training and vestibular training. So, you know, making sure that their balance and their visual function, so not how well they can see, but how well they can see in their periphery when they're concentrating on something centrally, how well they can react to something that they see. So, you know, The test is what we call go, no go. So it's like reaction time testing, but with a cognitive element. So it's like hit it if it's red, hit it if it's green, don't hit it if it's red, rather than just hit it when it lights up, to have that reaction, because actually you need to be able to look at something, take in the information, process what it means, and then react when you're on a sports field. So it's about training up those sort of those visual skills as well can help.
That's great. Yeah, there's some, like I said, we were chatting off air, but at Therapy Expo this year, that was a highlight for me. There was a few speakers like Andrew Jackson, physio Andrew Jackson, has been on the show, who is pointing out vestibular training. It really seems to be a buzz thing at the moment, and rightfully so. It's kind of the missing piece, because I think Andrew Jackson was saying how it's interesting how, despite all the research and all the things we put into practice, the biggest determinant for injury is kind of, have you been injured before? So that kind of straight away suggests that, right, we're missing something from the jigsaw here, because if everyone who's been injured is getting injured again, obviously our rehab isn't as good as we'd like to think. We're missing something out. So she was alluding to the idea that maybe one of the chunks we're missing out is this vestibular training, this cognitive approach, where you need to, like you say, involve the brain in a thinking process rather than just pressing the red, pressing the green.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we know that depending on what literature you read, up to around 69% of people who continue to have symptoms post-concussion, those symptoms will be either vestibular or vision.
Very interesting. Yeah.
And the other thing to consider is that, you know, if we think about the forces that it takes to cause a concussion, and again, that depends on, you know, the individual, but within the literature, it's somewhere between 60 and 160 G to cause a concussion, as opposed to a whiplash, which occurs at 4.5 G. So again, anybody with a concussion should be having a neck assessment, and not just sort of your range of movement and strength, but actually your sensory motor. So, you know, are you, how aware are you of neck position? You know, can you come back to a neutral position with your eyes closed after having had your head moved? Mm-hmm. So the joint position, the cervical joint position error test, to look at sort of that sensory motor element of it and sensory motor training.
Interesting. You mentioned whiplash a couple of times now, and I think maybe that's, whiplash has been used and abused so much in the media, especially with kind of even like in comic programs and TV, with a person putting their insurance thing on to get their, you know, their insurance paid and everything. And I know a period of time where people have said that we have caused other patients to catastrophize a little bit over whiplash, because if we do that with our wrist, we don't suddenly go, oh my God, protect the wrist, put something around it, and people should be more confident in their necks. And the fact we do this in a car accident or something, or suddenly like that, we shouldn't be so worried about it, because that could be what is causing people to stay stiff and not actually move and develop more kind of pain elsewhere. But I'm interested whether in certain cases that whiplash moment, maybe the neck hasn't been injured to the extent which some people think, but we've got to think more of what's potentially happened with regards to concussion then.
Absolutely. So we need to think about concussion, but we also need to think about the massive amount of sensory information that our neck gives us, mm-hmm. Around our position and our balance. So, you know, if we think about sort of the feedback, you know, so when we think about sensory feedback and joint position, we can all put our thumb up, close our eyes, and we know whether our thumb is bent or whether our thumb is straight. The same happens with our neck. We should be able to close our eyes, know, and know that it's turned over there and bring it back to where it was when it started. The amount of information that we get from our neck is massively greater. And I think it's around about 17, 19 sort of spindles in the thumb that give us back that information. And it's in the hundreds in the muscles of the neck. So although, you know, we're not, you know, there may be an element of catastrophizing, we also have to recognize that we get a lot of sensory information from the neck. And an interesting one to do is, you know, somebody who may be coming with sort of whiplash type injuries, is you assess their balance, but what's their balance like when you put their head into rotation? What's their balance like when you put their head into extension? Because what you're doing is you're then bringing in, you know, what is happening at a sensory motor level in the neck around position in space, and therefore your postural reflexes.
This is excellent. And this definitely is a segue just to give a shout out to Paul Coker, who we also mentioned off air. Anybody who's done Paul Coker's courses recently that are around the country, I know Anna Maria had him down at Exeter. I think Nikki, you've had Paul Coker a couple of times, haven't you? I mean, Nikki, join in if you want here, but yeah, Paul Coker is very much on top of that. And that's, as you've described, probably exercises he wish you hadn't mentioned, because I think he likes to think of them as his. But yeah, definitely. They've been around a bit longer than, actually, I don't think they have been around longer than Paul. No one's been around longer than Paul. But yeah, definitely, people are very excited by this. It is very much something which we've ignored until now. I was going to ask you something else. No, I think it's gone now, because I'm thinking of Paul Coker. Oh, I just wanted to give a shout out as well, because I forgot Andrew McCauley's name last week when we were doing Therapy for Runners, Ask Us Anything. And that's another person alongside Angela Jackson, so who is very much into the idea of chaos and introducing this into a rehab. So sorry, Andrew, personally, from my heart, I make this into an Instagram clip now. Andrew McCauley, founder of ProCare Sports Medicine. I do apologize for getting your surname last week. I've got no excuses. It was just bad of me. So I'm sorry, and I owe you one. Mm. There we go. Right, back to the show. So great. Nicky Mansfield has been stimulated by the Paul Coker mention. Paul Coker is here in Cambridgeshire in just a couple of weeks, still places left. There we go, Nicky. That wasn't actually just trying to plug it. It was just some feedback on Paul and what his course offers. But anyway, Nick, let's stay with you for a question, if that's okay. Nicky says, have you had any experience success using breath training as part of post-concussion rehab? Good point. Jacko credits it as the missing piece of the jigsaw in making a full recovery post-multiple concussion. So just to put a little bit of context into this, probably the last time we talked about concussion wasn't Keith Burnett. I think it was probably David Jackson. And this was in episode 160, which was entitled Breathwork for Head Trauma. And just to give listeners who didn't catch that episode a little bit of context, David Jackson, very successful rugby player, Nottingham RFC, career of 13 years, 316 appearances. He was forced to retire basically in 2013 due to traumatic brain injury, which does, like you say, Nicholas, sound so much more serious than forced to retire because of concussion. Yeah, concussion, but if you say brain injury, then yeah, that's a good reason to retire. And it was a fascinating episode with him on many accounts because of the fact that when they examined him enough, they realized he'd actually probably had two or three or more concussions previously and traumatic brain injury. And also it wasn't done on the pitch, it was done in training as well, the one which actually forced the retirement. But he and we'll talk about the psychological effects of concussion shortly. In fact, we'll do that after this, if that's okay with you. But he was very big in pointing out that he felt at the time, this was back in 2013, so things might have changed, but he really felt let down by the amount of knowledge that was out there. And especially in his circumstances where his career was ripped away from him. I mean, he was like, doesn't get much more elite in terms of competitive elite sports. And he was told, you can't play anymore. There's not much you can do, mate. Just go home and rest. And yeah, things will perk up. And he was dealing with suicide, with depression, with anxiety, all the things which particularly an athlete, but not only is going to deal with. And that's when he did a little bit investigating himself and he found out, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about this, Nick, if that's okay, that the research that had been done connecting breath work, particularly kind of nasal breath work, with stimulating the medullary respiratory center in the medulla oblongata.
Yeah.
Yes. And the kind of positive effect. I mean, he was looking at the research, and even if it was confirmation bias, he reported a fantastic change in his symptoms, in his way of being, his sleep and everything. And it's a great episode. So do kind of have a listen to that if you want to, people. Episode 160 with David Jacko Jackson, who is an instructor with Oxygen Advantage, and he founded ProBreathwork.com. Nicola, over to you. Breathwork.
So I think to put it into context, it would be good to look at what we would look at for a concussion. So we know that concussions are multimodal, and we've touched on a few of the modes that there, but we know that concussion affects the autonomic nervous system. We know that some people will go on to develop something called POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, whereby you get changes to your heart rate when you are in an upright position, abnormal changes, which affects blood pressure and therefore, you know, ability to function. So that's got a whole host of symptoms that are associated with that. And one of the things that we know sort of massively increases symptoms after a concussion is anything that affects sleep. A concussion in itself can affect sleep, but addressing sleep after is one of the main things that we would do in the very early days, making sure that there is sufficient rest and making sure that it's good quality sleep and that sleep is prioritized. So it's not sort of staying up late, getting up early. It is prioritizing sleep because that's when the brain recovers. So the role of breath work is around sort of looking at autonomic regulation, bringing sort of, you know, calming down the nervous system. Breath work works through vagal nerve stimulation amongst other methods. So it calms down the nervous system. It reduces sympathetic nervous system activity, which is then sort of promoting rest, relaxation, autonomic parasympathetic, which is your rest and digest nervous system. So promoting better sleep. So it links in with how we would manage the autonomic nervous system effects as well.
Mm-hmm.
So autonomic is one of the things that we would assess. And that is why the return to play starts off with steady state exercise. So what, you know, it starts off with rest for the first 48 hours. Then you would go on to sort of light daily activity. When you go back into exercise, then it's steady state exercise. So you want a steady state heart rate, no peaks and troughs. And you want to see if the athlete will tolerate increasing the heart rate and maintaining a increased heart rate without an increase in symptoms. Because as I said earlier, it's energy depletion within the brain and changes in blood flow in the brain. When you increase the demand through exercise, is the brain and body able to meet that, or does it create a deficit, i.e. experienced in symptoms? So if somebody is reporting headaches, confusion, feeling more dizzy when they're exercising, then that shows that there is some autonomic involvement.
Excellent. There we go.
So that would probably be where breath work, I would say breath work fits in.
So is it possible that 10 or 11 years ago now, that wouldn't have been suggested by a consultant? And now these days, depending who you go and see, it might be something that might be introduced as part of rehab, or?
I think it will probably sit more with therapists than consultants. I think consultants diagnose more than treat. There are a very few that will be involved in the treating as well, but for the majority, certainly if you go to your local A&E hospital, then no, they're very unlikely to come up with, you know, a recommendation for a treatment plan. And then we've got the other modalities. So we know that vision can be affected. One of the things that is very noticeable after a concussion is your what's called your convergence. So your ability, when you look at something out here and you bring it closer, for both eyes to come in and look at it. And that, you know, particularly in children, that translates. They can't explain that to you. They don't have the words. And what is often seen is, you know, their behavior at school deteriorates. They start messing around instead of paying attention to lessons. And it is because, you know, all of a sudden the words aren't clear on the page. They're not able to bring their focal point into to where the words are. So everything looks a bit blurred. They're not concentrating properly. And so that's an important factor, you know, if assessing convergence, their ability to track, so their ability to sort of follow a moving object and look between one point and another. So that, you know, vision is really important to assess. Your vestibular system, we know that a lot of people after a concussion get a condition called BPPV, benign postural positional vertigo, which basically means you move your head and you go very dizzy for a few seconds and then it settles down. But obviously, you know, if you're trying to run around and look for a ball, every time you move your head, you go very dizzy for a few seconds. That's not great to be experiencing on a football pitch or rugby pitch. And we know also there's something called the vestibular ocular reflex, so a link between the vestibular system, which controls balance, and the eyes. So again, you may not go dizzy, but what might happen is when you turn your head, the world takes a fraction of a second to sort of come back into focus again. And these are all reasons why people shouldn't return to play too early, because if they're, sometimes people just say, oh, I'm off my game, but they're off their game because their vision timing is just a fraction out. So instead of being able to very quickly pick up where the ball is, they are a fraction of a second behind where they were before they had their concussion. And that's enough to make them off their game, as people sort of say.
So in theory, then, you've mentioned quite a few tests, which with training, whilst people are still working in their scope, finger tests and seeing if how people react and like you said, convergence and stuff, that's something which therapists could be doing just as a quick check to help somebody who comes back and said, oh yeah, I had a concussion and it was diagnosed, now you want to get back. If you did something like that, just say, let me just try something a second with you, because you reported you're still a little bit dizzy and stuff and it comes up as a negative, that would be a red flag to say, you know what, I'm not quite sure you're ready yet. But go, who would you tell them to then go and see if they do test positive in some of these tests, thanks to listening to this podcast, for example?
So if it's looking at vision and vestibular, then because the two are quite intrinsically linked, then it would probably be a vestibular physio to start with.
Okay.
to look at, you know, further in-depth vestibular testing. It may be that they need to go to ophthalmology or optometry, but the vestibular physio should be able to do that screening and see whether it is anything specific to the eyes or whether it's all linked with the sort of the neck, the vestibular and vision all.
So is that something
together.
That as a physio has done on top of their original studies or defeated yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So you need
yeah.
to.
Yeah. It's not part of the undergraduate syllabus.
Okay, fine. That's very interesting. So again, kind of that multidisciplinary approach and having a good network and having someone that would be very interesting.
Yes.
And in order to do some of these tests, looking at the time, that brings us on to some courses that you've put together, carefully arranged for people who at entry level might be interested because they know they're working with people who potentially have had concussions. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
So there is a company called Your Brain Health, which is very big in Australia, and it's led by two Australian physiotherapists. They are bringing the model sort of over to the UK world and then sort of going worldwide. So I am the educational lead for the UK for Your Brain Health. And we have three different levels of courses. The first level is around about 60 minutes online. And that will give you the introduction to concussion, what a concussion is, how to recognize it, what are the red flags in concussion, and that very sort of initial management of what you should be doing, and a little bit of sort of insight into the rehab as I've gone over tonight.
Entry level for that, for listeners who are thinking, oh, that's, I think, because... My listener, that made me feel very important suddenly. Our listeners and not just STA members, but there's quite a lot of imposter syndrome we've talked about a lot. And they naturally presume that if it's a physio, especially one of your experiences, oh yeah, I'm doing a course. They think, well, obviously I'm not going to be allowed through the door. But what do you think would be a level of knowledge or entry requirement in order to be able to attend that level one course?
Zero.
There you go. Can't get lower than that.
So, you know, the level one course, we are aiming it out at anybody who is near a sports pitch. So they don't even have to, you know, they don't have to be a therapist. They could be the coach. They could be a parent volunteer. They could be the referee. It's anybody who wants to upskill in their knowledge of what a concussion is, recognizing a concussion and knowing what to do in that initial management.
And that in itself, because you're involved in it, we know this is going to be evidence-based and evidence-informed.
Yes.
And so it may well be an idea for anybody who thinks they've already got a concussion certificate of some form or done a course to do this to see how much has changed and what does need updating maybe.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm just going to bring this big on the screen so people can see it. If you listen to the podcast, you can't see this on the screen. But those of you who actually are in the live lounge, and there's the website that you need to have a little look at. As Nicholas said, the website itself is yourbrainhealth.io. So it's yourbrainhealth.io. And if you go to that website, then you will click on courses and you'll see very nicely labeled there. You just got concussion level one, level two, and level three. So there's the information that we are talking about there. And if you stay tuned, STA members, then there is an STA discount of 20%, which we will mention shortly, a little bit of a hook there. So you don't just sign off now. But yeah, so that's the level one course, which, as Nicholas said, is for anybody. If you are working near a pitch and you would like to up your game in terms of knowledge about concussion, that would be one for you. Right, level one. What about level two then? What happens there?
So level one and level two are both online, and they were both recorded by James over in Australia. Mm-hmm. And level two is... we have cut it down slightly. I think it's 14 hours. It might be slightly under, but it's around 14 hours. It's all modular. It's all online, and it goes through all the goes through sort of, again, a little bit more detail about what a concussion is, and then looks at the multimodal assessment. So how you would assess autonomic, vestibular, vision, cervical, touches a little bit on mood, anxiety, depression, and then things that sort of go associated with a concussion, such as migraine, headaches. So it gives you sort of the skills to go through in theory and demonstrates videos of the assessments.
Fantastic. So both level one and level two, just to repeat, online, so you guys can do it in your own time. The first one's like I think it's 60 minutes or 45 minutes long.
Yes.
And then the second one is longer, just under 14 hours of content, which again, you can do in your own time. And obviously it'd be worth doing level one before you went on to level two, just so you've got the right foundation, I guess, the information knowledge, or
not necessarily. You know, if you've if if you're wanting to get involved in the rehab side of it, then, you know, you could start into level two. You wouldn't have to do level one first.
Fantastic. Now that takes us to level three, which is the face-to-face one, which I believe you have to have done, what, both the previous courses or at least the level two?
No, you have to have done level two or another concussion course in at a similar level. So to do the level three, you need to be coming into it with a good understanding of, you know, the theory and, you know, the theoretical how to assess. And then the level three is all about putting it into practice, getting, you know, getting sort of supervised practice of how to do all the techniques, practicing on each other, getting some feedback and working through some case studies.
Fantastic. And that's in person with yourself and Professor James...
James McLaughlin, yes.
Oh, I'm not going to try saying that. Yeah.
Well, the first one is it will be me and some other tutor leading them because he's not going to fly out from Australia for every course.
That makes sense. That would not be good. And we've got some dates already for these in May and July, haven't we, I think?
Yes. So it's the 11th of May in Leeds. And then I think you're probably on the website and I'm not. I think it's the 13th of July in Doncaster.
Well, yeah, definitely.
And we are looking for a venue down south.
Oh, right. Okay, so down south. Where's south for you? Is that south of London then?
We are trying to be geographic. So sort of we haven't secured a venue yet, but probably sort of London or sort of slightly to the west of London.
Right, okay. You're going to have people writing in nonstop now. Great.
we need a training venue with lots of beds.
Fantastic. We'll make sure that that gets mentioned in the show notes so people know.
And then we will be taking it up to Scotland as well. So the plan is to sort of cover the country with the face-to-face courses.
Do you have hosts up in Scotland?
No, not yet.
Oh, we've got some contacts there as well. That's fine.
Okay.
That's good. Wonderful. Great. So that's Leeds on the 11th of May and Doncaster on the 13th of July. If you want the face-to-face, but bear in mind, again, if you're listening and getting all excited, you need to have done either the level two comprehensive concussion management online via the website or something of a similar level. And I guess if people aren't sure if their training is of that level, then they can contact you personally, or is there something on the website? How would they find out?
Yes, if you make contact through the website, then one of us will get in touch with you and just have a chat through as to
amazing
what
Fantastic.
Level you've done.
Very exciting.
We do have one last unanswered question if we've still
time. We do. I'm saving that now. I'm just making her wait a little bit. Very demanding, aren't Nikki? Okay, yeah, I can't think of anything else. Yeah, go on then, let's bring it up. Nikki Mansfield, you can have the last question of the night. Let's bring this up. Nikki Mansfield says, on the ANS angle, as we're monitoring the steady increase in output, might we be looking out for chronic fatigue type symptoms, say, hours later or next day, suggesting poor exertion recovery?
Short answer is yes. The longer answer is that one of the main things that we're screening for with the the increasing steady state exercise is whether it triggers symptoms. So the way we would do a full exercise assessment is the Buffalo Concussion Treadmill Test or the bike equivalent if somebody wasn't able to do a treadmill. But what we're looking for is, does activity increase their symptoms? And generally speaking, it's straight away. But yes, absolutely. Sometimes it can be a delayed reaction. And if that's a delayed reaction, then you would be prescribing aerobic steady state exercise at a roundabout, sort of at a lower level, what we call a sub-symptom level. So you need to know what heart rate they started to get symptoms at, and then they need to exercise at a percentage lower than that at steady state to improve.
There we go, Nikki. Short and long answer. It was interesting when I was reading about that Buffalo Concussion Treadmill Test. I think I saw that it pointed out that in recent, I don't know how or when the studies came about that showed it, but the idea that just as we know that total rest physically often isn't the best way to reach recovery, you need to be putting some optimal load through a limb or something or a muscle or tendon. It's similar with this, isn't it? We know now that brain rest isn't as effective as once was preached, that we do need to get people actually moving. Tell us a little bit about that, if you're okay time-wise.
Yes. So, you know, the advice for concussion used to be rest till you get better. But, you know, I can't think of any injury that you rest till you get better. You've got to do something active to speed up recovery. So rest, certainly for the brain, is really important in the first 48 hours. However, beyond 48 hours, then, you know, lying in a darkened room, resting, which is how some people interpret rest, is actually detrimental because you're going into sensory deprivation. You're not using your vestibular system. You're not using sort of vision. You're not getting that stimulation. You're not getting the changes to the autonomic nervous system with your sort of, you know, increasing heart rate on demand for functional activity. So all of that is important. And, you know, low level exercise, we're not, you know, nobody's going running, you know, straight after concussion, but get, you know, going for a gentle walk and, you know, doing some sort of pottering around the home activities is important to get on the road to recovery. It's not around just lie in a darkened room and rest. However, with any sort of activity, if you start to feel an increase in symptoms, then you do go and rest until those symptoms subside. So we usually say, if you're thinking of a VAS scale, 0 to 10, if your symptoms are increasing sort of above 7 or by 3 points, then, you know, you stop and you go and have a rest.
Fascinating. Great advice. It's 9:04. I'm already kept you. I apologize, Nicola. I will keep you for very shortly for a few minutes more. I think there's so much there. Once again, and it's something I harp on about, and I hope people don't get bored of it, but that sounds terrible. If you're a massage therapist, I don't like saying even because it makes it sound like there's a sliding scale, and that's not true at all, because massage therapist, you may be the person who somebody who has suffered from concussion comes to visit because they want to lie down and get away from the stress for an hour. And they're going to be receptive to you because they're taking their clothes in front of you and they like you and they know you. And that's where you could be educating that person and just having a little chat, maybe after, before, and identifying some of these potential masqueraders where they think, oh, I'm just dizzy, or this is happening because of this, this, and this. And it could be, if you know through their medical parkie or something that they've coming back from concussion, if you ask the right questions and listen and you see, thanks to information from people like Nicola, that they might be missing some of the proper rehabilitation recovery from concussion, then you could change that person's life massively and avoid the chances of re-concussion if they're going back to sport by just listening to these points. So again, it's so important, I think, for everybody involved in the health process to know about these things. So thank you, Nicola, so much for, and there has been so many tonight that you've shared, so it's amazing. Definitely an area that needs cleaning up, so thank you for that. Go on.
I was just going to say, thank you very much for inviting me on. I think it's such an important topic to share knowledge on. You know, none of us can do it in isolation. And, you know, no one person can be everywhere. So the more people that know about how to recognize a concussion, how to manage it well, will improve the brain health of our population.
Definitely. Amazing. Right. I do not want to keep you for much longer, but I do just need to quickly let our listeners know about what's coming up in the next couple of weeks. Very excited, always excited. But well, we've got a special two-part shoulder series coming up with two absolute giants from the industry. I'm just trying to create a little bit of dramatic effect now by not saying the name straight away, but you probably don't even appreciate, and hopefully a lot of you don't appreciate what we've got lined up for you, because you won't have heard of these people. I always pray that you haven't heard of them and you haven't seen them, even though as famous as they are and as well-known and respected as they are in the literature and across the board. We have got next week in our part one, it's going to be called Treating the Shoulder, Steps to Success. And we've got special guest Joe Gibson, who anybody who is familiar with Joe, hugely respected both nationally and internationally for her shoulder rehab lectures and courses. She's a clinical physio specialist at the upper limb unit at the Royal Liverpool Hospital of the UK. Absolute massive educator, shoulder geek on Twitter. That's her name, not her just her personality. But yeah, an absolute gem of a guest. I'm so happy that we have got you or got her to talk about the shoulder in part one. That's next week. If you listen to the podcast and it's not April the 16th yet, then I really would suggest that you try and join us for that 8 o'clock on YouTube or on Facebook, whatever your poison is, whatever you prefer. And then the week after in part two, as if Joe Gibson wasn't enough, on April the 23rd, I'll be talking live with special guest Ian Horsley, who will be talking shoulder assessment, qualitative versus quantitative. And again, if you work with the shoulder and you've done any education, then the names don't get much bigger than Ian Horsley. He's currently lead physio and technical lead for the Northwest for the English Institute of Sport. He was physio for England Rugby Union for 14 years, including 6 years working with the elite playing squad. PhD in 2013, examined issues around shoulder injuries in professional rugby. several articles published in peer-reviewed journals and chapters in endless sports injury management books. And he's currently consultant physio to England football. So again, I don't like to say that I'm giving you too much because I'm not, because you deserve everything I can give you. But two massive names if you're interested in shoulder injuries next week and the week after. So do please join us for that. However, tonight has been all about Nicola Hunt and concussion. So thank you once again, Nicola, for joining us. Really appreciate it. And like I say, if you're interested in concussion courses, then go along to the website. All the links will be in the show notes. And also, oh yes, the discount, which you've hung around for, to know what the discount code is. That's why people haven't signed off yet. So yeah, for Sports Therapy Association members, there is a 20% discount for these courses. And all you have to do is enter the code. No, I'm not that stupid. What you have to do is you have to go along to the members area for the Sports Therapy Association website, go along to the members area, and the code will be given to you then. It's just one of, it's reason 136B for being a member of the Sports Therapy Association. Yeah, you'll find the code there, along with all the codes which our guests graciously offer us for the great education they're doing. So there you go. Find out. If you're not sure how to go to the members area, then just email Matt at the sta.co.uk or Jake at the sta.co.uk or Gary at the sta.co.uk and we'll help you out. Right, Nicola, once again, thank you so much for your information. Absolutely brilliant. And you've got such a wonderful way of talking about it and educating people about it as well. So I wish you luck in the courses and hope they go really well.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for who was listening and for the questions, because some really great questions tonight.
Certainly have. Well done, people. Done me proud. Right. Take care, everybody. Look after each other. Hopefully we'll see a few of you live next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Sports Therapy Association podcast, putting evidence back into soft tissue therapy.